Welcome to the second in the Gas and LNG Insights podcast series produced by NGW in partnership with RBAC. RBAC is the market-leading supplier of global and regional gas and LNG market simulation systems. These systems provide industry analysts powerful tools for supporting investment and M&A strategy, environmental and sustainability goals, credible risk analysis, trading strategy and policy development and assessment. Today, we are joined by Dr. Ning Lin, Executive Director of Global Gas and LNG at RBAC. Dr. Lin is a respected energy industry economist who, before joining RBAC, managed global market analysis capabilities for Shell Trading, Koch Industries, and Tenaska. She holds a PhD in economics from the University of Texas at Austin. Welcome, Dr. Lin.
Hello, Joe. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So, the economic uncertainty globally remains very high. What are the key economic forecasts for 2024 and 2025 influencing the strategies of major LNG regions?
I think that's a great question to start our discussion today, since it's the beginning of 2024. Actually, globally, as an economist, I avoid talking about GDP exact numbers because that's a career opportunity of its own. But in general, I think the consensus of the industry among various forecasts, it's cautiously optimistic. Overall, after 2023, I think 2023, everybody was worrying about economic growth as well as inflation. For 2024, I think that for a couple of the census, I think World Economics Forum is saying it's 2.9%. I have seen 3%. So, it's kind of the very close to about 3%, a little bit less. But the other thing is quite interesting is it does actually see that a lot of the countries, central banks, has done a lot to really control their inflation rate, which that is also important to bring some certainty and also encourage basic spendings of the consumers. So I think overall it's cautiously optimistic for 2024. And you can see that, just pulled up the slide, we see the GDP growth forecast, and we plot it by the very first green column is the first 3 years, 2021 to 2023 average. So that gives you kind of a benchmark. And then the bright blue is 2024. 2025 is a yellow color of the GDP. And these are on the left side, I actually included two charts. One of them is GDP growth, one of this inflation. The reason it's important is we're not just looking at GDP growth, but like I said, inflation rates and the control of the inflation rate does bring further reduced uncertainty, especially for basic needs for energy demand. So if we can see for some of the top regions that we listed, especially relevant to gas, China has been, I think that growth rate is still remain to be moderate, but fairly strong, reflecting that they have a very strong fiscal support of the government, although there is some slowdown in the real estate sector for China, but continue to be strong. And on the inflation rate, China is actually controlled pretty well. Another highlight is India. India has been very strong for the past 2 years, definitely very strong growth, but India has been battling with a little bit higher inflation rate. So, the central bank, the Reserve Bank of India, RBI, would be kind of balancing between the two to kind of continue to have growth while they have to get their inflation under control. And one of the interesting part is, like Russia has a fairly high inflation rate and low economic growth, GDP. Well, because, I think I just read this morning, there's like over $250 billion of foreign direct investment actually directed away from Russia since in the past 2 years. So, wow. You can see there is definitely some impact for Russia. And of course, U.S. has been pretty stable. central bank has done a great job of control the interest rate, but you know, it's not quite there yet. But I think people starting getting a little bit more optimistic about 2024. You know, overall, in terms of the annual gas consumption, the interesting part, like I said, there's a couple of things. When we think about gas demand, we think about different sectors. In our model, we look at it into residential and commercial, which is tied very much into GDP, you know, and also inflation. And there is industrial growth. So, you know, industrial sector, especially for China and Asia, a lot of these developing countries, their largest sector of gas demand, it's actually not necessarily on the heating, you know, on the residential and commercial, but it's actually on industrial as also gas fire generation for electricity. So those are the ones ties quite a bit into GDP, you know, especially industrial demand. And as you can see on the right hand side, we have a chart from our latest forecast of annual gas consumption by country. I only plotted for, you know, from 2020 to 2026. So 3 years forward, including this year, 4 years back. So kind of give you a good, you know, outlook. As we can see, China, this is where I wanted to put this at scale. You know, because people say, well, China slowed down. Yes, China slowed down. But you look at this, the sheer volume China compared to India. Okay, so India is growing. It's going to continue to grow, but at the same time, China is still maintaining a fairly healthy growth. You know, we're talking about China as lower about 5% growth. That is still pretty good. That means the economy is growing. The demand is still going to grow. And, you know, if you can see the Germany, Japan, UK, they are fairly flat. South Korea has a little bit upward, but it's very, very tiny. And European region, you know, a lot of them, we see a fairly steady, less than 1% GDP growth and a fairly flat or even further reduction of demand. You know, the overall message of European region is after the 15% of mandatory reduction of gas demand, what we have seen in the past year is that kind of caused some structure shift of the demand pattern, right? And especially on the residential and commercial sector, we believe there is some permanent destruction of gas demand. Although, you know, industrial demand, I think that if we're being pessimistic, we'll see that industrial demand is kind of also reducing. But in the past 1 month, you know, after all this January 2024, although I don't show it here, there is actually double-digit growth in Europe demand because it's cold weather. So among all the, you know, very flat growth, we still see some response of demand due to weather. So I think overall, it's fairly stable market. You know, so the stakeholders or the players in the market, they really have to balance between, you know, energy needs versus economic growth, that would really reflect in your, you know, LNG strategy procurement, which we can talk a little bit more.
Okay, yeah, interesting. So China very much the driving force economically and in gas consumption. Going to the here and now, prices, LNG prices, gas prices globally have been falling. They're now relatively low, comparatively low, compared to what they were a couple of years ago. Market is fairly well supplied, but there's a new risk. You have current geopolitical tensions in the Red Sea and elsewhere impacting LNG trade routes and natural gas availability. How could stakeholders adapt to mitigate these risks?
Okay, that's a good question. So we talked about, you know, overall picture fairly stable, you know, and the gas price also shows some complacency in the market, a little bit relaxed because the prices are low, right? But you're right, there are some interesting geopolitical events. It's really kind of constraining the value chain, which we can dive a little bit in about this. First of all, is your Red Sea, you know, tension. And because of Red Sea tension and the potential risk of attacking the commercial fleet. There are a lot of diversional fleet, not just LNG, but general fleet, which going through Suez Canal, right? So a lot of them actually is instead, they're going through the Cape of Good Hope at the tip of Africa. So as you can see, that is just adding shipping costs and the route time for the vessels. And, you know, so that's one. And one of the things, another thing on the shipping routes, which on the other side of the globe is Panama Canal. So Panama Canal is not really a geopolitical issue, but it's happened concurrent about the same time. It's Panama Canal is experiencing an extremely dry season, as I understand. I think their government is reporting at end of October, which is at towards end of their raining season. They had the lowest and driest October ever, like after like 150 years or something of recording. So because of that, you know, there's really a critical low level of the canal, and it restricts, I believe, the official for Panama Canal, it's basically reducing and restricting how many cargoes can go through Panama. And that is also affecting US LNG cargoes to go to Asia. So now you have kind of two shipping constraints we just talked about, right? One of them is LNG going through Panama, which happened earlier than the Red Sea. It started about November last year and is still continuing, that there is restriction going to Asia from US. As you can see, how much of this two chart, which is LNG flow from the origin region to Asia, as well as to Europe, right? First of all, you can see Asia in sheer volume, there's a lot, but what I would like to direct your attention, which first is the orange color of the stack on both sides, those are from North America, mainly it's from US, right? So this is of course a long-term chart, but that kind of can show you that there is a growth. If we look at somewhere between 2020 and 2030, you know, US is growing its imports into Asia. But since last year, November last year, because Panama Canal's a constraint, LNG from the Gulf Coast of US has to go through, you know, go through Europe and Suez Canal to go to Asia, which almost doubled the amount of the time of shipping. But now after Suez Canal and Red Sea tension, they have to go even further to go through, you know, the Cape of Good Hope, which add another almost like 50% of the shipping time, you know. So this is why there is a little bit of a tension on that. And also for Europe side, as we're just talking about, actually it's quite interesting. So what is there any, you know, restriction for Europe? There is some, but not a lot. Mainly it's because you see the light blue color in the Europe chart, there is a little bit that is mainly from Qatar, which is shipping, you know, from Middle East to Europe. But that is a very small amount. When I say small, that means it's small for Europe as a whole, as you can see in the picture, but also it's small for Qatar as a light blue color for both charts. So basically that little sliver in Europe, even now, if Qatar has to go through, you know, tip of Africa, it's not the biggest deal. That's why you see constraint in the value chain, but we have not seen significant movement in price to reflecting any tension. So you know, especially for Europe. For Asia, there is a little bit more tension, but because of the current price premium, it is possible to cover how much is the extra parts of the routes. I mean, also another thing, you're like, well, you know, Red Sea is such a big deal, why they're not nervous? Well, because I said, if they go through Panama and they have to go through Suez, they double the amount of the time. And then they just went another 3,000-4,000 kilometers. So, I mean, it's bad, but it's not a deal breaker because it's already bad. They just went from bad to worse. So that's kind of the way you can think about it. It's like the market is relatively stable right now, and there's some slack, and the increasing of the, you know, shipping routes, it did add up to the shipping cost, but it did not have a material movement of the market price yet, you know, especially for LNG sector.
So we have the impact of the conflict there, and then we have the impact of political developments in the US more in the longer term. So the US Biden administration announced a temporary pause on approvals for LNG exports to non-FTA countries in January. what kind of impact is that going to have? You know, how much extra supply is at stake from that pause, and over what time period in terms of when that supply enters the market?
That's a very good question. So this is another one. So it sounds like we have a very busy beginning of 2024 with several issues, right?
Certainly.
So the Biden administration, Joe, you just said very well. So it paused. First of all, it's a pause on the DOE's, so Department of Energy's, their authorization for export. And it's only for non-FTA countries. So that means, of course, there's a lot of them. So, you know, China is not, EU is not, that's, you know, but, you know, South Korea is actually part of FTA, by the way. Japan is not. So there is, you know, so basically majority of the country will be impacted if this continues. So it's just kind of on the buyer side. So now on the seller side, you talked about, in terms of the batches, so in my head, I'm kind of thinking this way, any existing terminal operation not affected. So that's a very first layer, right? So let's talk about the ones coming online. The way I see it, there are three layers. The one layer is what is already proved. So if it's already proved, we're talking about some of them that it's coming online, a lot of them are 2025. As you can see on this chart, we have incremental LNG production capacity. On the left side is liquefaction capacity. On the right side is regas. So since we're talking about LNG production export pause, so we can see mainly it's the orange color of the stack bar will be affected. And this is showing is incremental capacity coming online. So the ones coming online 2025, 2026, 2027 even, they are not affected. These are the terminals, you know, that already got approval and they already got an export approval and they don't need to do anything further. They will go on and have their exports. The next layer is what I call, they have the approval, but they might need extension. These are the ones like Cameron Phase 2, Mexico Pacific, Rio Grande LNG. And so these are the ones, they may have some issues because they may need extension for the non-FTA approval. And this is not really specified in the DOE announcement back in January. But at the same time, you know, they're a couple of years away. So I don't think anyone is really right now trying to test what will be in the new region and decision for DOE yet, right? So I don't think there is a lot of, you know, projects being nervous yet about that. And the very last layer, it's the ones that they have not get approval. There's a couple of them, like, you know, Corpus Christi Phase 3. I think that's Train 8-9. Altamira float LNG, although it's in Mexico, but they also need approval because their fake gas is coming from US. Calcasieu Pass Phase 2. So these are the ones on the last part, what I call third wave, right? So they're not getting approval yet at all. They haven't even applied the approval, so they need approval. So for now, these are the ones definitely they will be on pause unless this is lifted. However, all of them together, what we're talking about is right now, just kind of a baseline, US has about 93, 94 MMPTA annual liquefaction capacity. We're talking about the first tier, which I told you that is not affected. That will add about 50, I think it's 50 to 60 MMPTA. So without anything, even with the regulation, US will have, you know, a two-thirds of increase of its liquefaction capacity in the next couple of years. That is not affected, okay? In the very last part, I think we're talking about maybe another 30 to 50, depends on which tier you're talking about, that might be affected. This is really talking about, do we see US double or more than double its current capacity? And the timeline would be likely towards end of this decade, you know, it will be late 2020s to about 2030. That would be the timeline, right? And if, of course, I think that a lot of buyer side, especially for, you know, Germany and some of the European country have contracted negotiation for those projects. It may be impacted. Right now, they're a bit nervous. The biggest negative feedback I think we have heard in the market is from Japan and some of the Asia countries, because Japan, as you know, U.S. have worked with Japan, say, you know, they will ban the Russia LNG. So now they're banned on Russia LNG, but at the same time, they are also tied into these projects from the U.S. So there is some concern from Asia buyers that whether LNG, U.S. LNG long-term is reliable, right? But at the same time, I think a lot of people in the industry believe this is a pure political move from the government side. You know, of course, I already explained to you that in terms of capacity, U.S., regardless, U.S. is going to be a major, major LNG exporter of the world. You're just talking about the very last bit, right? So, but does that have any further and longer term impact? It's hard to say because it's a political move. It's very likely the picture will be different early part of 2025. A year from now, right? Mm-hmm. After the new president sworn into the office. So it's something we yet to see. But at the same time, I do not think that it's creating any ripple effect in terms of the market yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, on the supply side, potentially it could open up, you know, opportunities for the likes of Qatar. But as you said, it's too early, you know, to say that.
Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned that, because you probably see that Qatar just came out and, you know, a little bit interesting timing. So they said, well, you know, we're going to, I think they add about 16 MMPTA. They're going to continue expand. And I think there is also some movement on Russia, and, you know, potentially Russia would be very well placed to maybe go and have some discussion with Asia buyer. I think Russia just came out and say they secured a LNG deal with India. Extension. So I think there is definite movement, but yet, you know, I think the grand picture is U.S. steel is going to be very firmly one of the top exporters. We're talking about a small amount. I don't think at this point it will change the big layout of the LNG global market long term. You know, there may be some marginally project here and there possible. But in terms of the sheer size and how U.S. LNG plays in the world, I don't think that it's really changed fundamentally. Yeah.
So the top spot is very safe. Moving to Europe, European gas market has gone under monumental changes in its supply mix over the last 2 years, from, you know, relying on Russia as its number one supplier by quite a big margin. Now it's embraced LNG, you know, a lot of Norwegian gas coming in and from elsewhere. Looking at the situation today, how flexible is the European gas market, and how can Europe ensure supply security amid fluctuating demand and supply constraints?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think right now, when you look at the market, a lot of people probably feel it's pretty good. So right now, especially at the beginning of this year, after 2 years, everybody was very nervous about European market. I think turning out 2024, it seems, oh, it's very quiet, the price is down, we see our demand is up. So I think it's very important to realize, even with this very steady and fairly mild market condition, there is a hidden volatility, because fundamentally Europe, just like you said, it went through a structure shift. So volatility level and things like that, it did not really go away due to the supply mix of the Europe market has changed, right? So instead of relying on mainly on Russian pipeline gas, it reduced to a very small amount. And I know that you probably have seen that, you know, Europe is not going to renew, like Ukraine is not going to renew with Russia for their pipeline tariff and contract. So all of that saying that, you know, there is not going to be a comeback likely for Russian pipeline gas. So Norwegian gas become very important. LNG plays a very important role. That comes back to talking about why U.S. cargo becomes so much more important for Europe, right? At one point, I believe, at one point last year, U.S. LNG cargo was more than half of what is received in Europe at one point. But, you know, you're talking about a major part of the Europe's LNG supply mix. So I think that for Europe, what they have been doing, this is a kind of an interesting chart, because I think on one side is Europe has reduced its flexibility of supply. Well, it's coming from a different form, right, as regas volume from the LNG cargoes. And this is a chart of LNG import versus Europe's total capacity. As you can see, Europe has really focused adding in a very short amount of time a regasification capacity of Europe. And the bottom part is our forecast long-term all the way to 2030 of regas volume. One of the thing is, the good thing is a lot of the countries are getting LNG imports, but also it's creating another form of dependence on a, you know, imported source. So that's one thing, what we call a reduced flexibility, because you don't have a lot of pipeline gas to back up anymore. Second thing about that is why we talk about reduced flexibility is because Europe went through a structure change of its demand. One of the thing is, when you go through this, consumers and sectors, they already downgrade their consumption. So any discrepancy and any discretionary consumption, we believe a lot of them is being, you know, it's being either conserved, they just use less, right? So there is kind of a certain amount of loss of demand. That loss of the demand is the part is more elastic. So when you lose that part, what you have left is, you know, technically less elastic part of demand, which means in general, it has a lower demand, but it may have less flexibility than before, right? And of course, another thing is Europe is also going through an energy transition, a very, I will say, very ambitious agenda of transition to renewables and even hydrogen-based you know, energy solutions, which that would create new challenges of calling on natural gas as a bridging fuel, no matter, you know, if the governments are saying that, but the truth is natural gas has to play a role, not only in terms of volume, but also backing up for a lot of different emerging sectors in the way that natural gas probably wasn't used in Europe before. So that's why we see that there is challenge ahead while the supply mix of Europe, you know, really it's there, but I think the volatility and reduce the flexibility is not something can be overlooked. And in terms of the LNG players, I think how to attract the cargoes in the short term, actually, it's a very good position for Europe. Like I said, because of Panama Canal and Red Sea, a lot of LNG of cargoes from Europe, at least for now, Europe looks a pretty good destination. And we know, as a matter of fact, a lot of Asian buyers, as long as they have, you know, if they could divert their cargo to Europe, they have been doing that in 2023, you know. Even some of the major China players, they have been diverting their cargo because of the very good arbitrage. So I think for now, Europe is really good being able to successfully attract LNG cargoes to its market, and it's continue doing so. Don't see anything change. And hopefully the LNG liquefaction capacity come online on time, that problem will solve. So I don't think there are going to be further challenges. We, you know, of course there's challenges we haven't seen, but I think that Europe probably went through the worst 2 years. But going forward, the reduced flexibility just requires more careful thought in terms of strategy of LNG procurement for European buyers, you know. But for now, I think they're pretty good.
Okay. Now, looking ahead, so in the medium and long term, what are the drivers for natural gas and LNG markets in Europe, but also in Asia, other regions? You mentioned the energy transition. That's obviously there's a lot of serious focus on that in Europe. You know, there's a push for a very, you could say, aggressive energy transition plan, but it's also happening, of course, in Asia. How does the energy transition and other factors affect the outlook?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting, for the medium to long term, what we see is the picture changes, right? So the picture changes. So for Europe, right, Europe is kind of in a situation as gas supply got taken away, had to restructure really fast. So you have a lot of short-term needs. But in terms of medium, long-term, Europe is trying to work really hard to get away from natural gas and reduce that dependency. So I think the most important thing is really looking at, you know, one side of Europe will be actively building regas, as we can see. It has a lot of even spare capacity. So I think Europe knows that it needs that. It needs to pay for that extra capacity to secure its supply. But at the same time, there is a very ambitious, you know, targets for using renewable and hydrogen. One of the things, I think that's very important, and it really helped to shape Europe's future and energy mix. One of the things from the natural gas, or two things, what I mentioned, one of them already, is natural gas will still be there. It may have a smaller volume, but the use and requirement of volatility and seasonal backup, I think it's only going to be increased. So the requirement for natural gas to be there and more flexible, it's going to increase over time when you have more renewable and hydrogen in the mix. And what does that mean? That means more volatility for natural gas. So that's one. And the second thing is really careful to watch the progression, because I think with a very ambitious plan, as we know, sometimes you have times that you did not hit the target. There may also be that, you know, ambitious plan would fall short because of, you know, provide the reliability of the system. So that's something I think is really important to watch for Europe. But overall, in medium long term, we see Europe to kind of settle into a flat and start decreasing if the plan of the, you know, ambitious climate goal policy works. Generally, we see Europe and major economy in Europe have a declining gas consumption. But for the Asia, so thank you for pulling up this slide, very timely. And the Asia is a different picture. We see more increasing of the consumption for some of the major countries. So here is a chart that we have the gas balance from the G2M2 model. Each of the, you know, the chart has its own scale, so they're quite different. So for so we can see each of the line of the line chart is the consumption. So the top line indicates what's the total gas consumption. The stack chart shows what is the different source of the natural gas in the country to meet the gas consumption. So we can see for China, a lot of them come from production, fair amount from pipeline imports from Russia and Central Asia, and the dark purple is regas. But we can also see very interestingly for Japan, South Korea, both of their developed countries in the Asia region, they have more a flat and declining curve because both of their government is pursuing their climate target goals, actually have a benchmarking of 2030 as well as 2050. And for India, as we can see, India continue to grow. They have a fairly strong growth potential in the long term, but a lot of that has to be met by regas. That's why also India is a major LNG player in the future. And I think its role and importance is only going to grow over time. And a couple of other countries actually have quite a bit of interesting growth. Thailand, you know, you can see Thailand, although it's fairly flat, but their domestic production is decreasing as well. So they actually have an increase of LNG potential. Philippines and Vietnam, both of them are very early on and new players in the LNG market, to name a few of the emerging markets, right? And we can, one thing I would say for the medium long term for Asia is generally we see growth for emerging market, but that is really pivoting on two things. One of them is their economics foundation of the country. Second thing is the globe, because this country generally is price sensitive to LNG. So like we talked about in the medium term, when a lot more incremental LNG liquefaction capacity hit the water, that will really help to keep the price competitive for the Asian new buyers to increase their LNG imports. But overall, I think those are kind of the drivers. So Asia countries are a lot of economics drivers to push up, while, you know, in European countries, I think economics grows flat and stable at best, while most of the driver of the gas consumption is actually moving away from natural gas, and as natural gas is backing up for renewable and hydrogen.
Okay, and what about the outlook for pricing?
So with all that kind of wrap up, I think that for pricing, what we have seen is the chart here we have seen is, we have seen a very, of course, we have to start with a very big spike, right? In 2022, we have experienced the price structurally. We have seen both Europe and the Asian markets coming down. And right now they're, having a pretty good range of faring comfortable for 2024 and 2025. Whether for the longer term, I think that we see as the liquefaction capacity coming online, we see the gas price for the importing regions, so for Asia as well as Europe, kind of moving slowly, even down to a below $10 on average of annual for gas price. And I'm talking about real price here without inflation, right? So by about 2030, early 2030s, that's where all the LNG project right now proposed would be coming online if they, if everything works out. And that's where we see that probably the most loose natural gas and LNG global balance, which support a more competitive price regime in both regions. And overall, in the long term, as you can see, we predict that the price will slowly coming up. This is really driven by the demand from the Asian markets, kind of from the mid to late 2030s, and then stable around, I think that somewhere between a $10 or $15 on long term for the importing region.
Well, Dr. Lin, thank you very much for sharing your analysis and perspectives today.
Well, I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much, Joe. Those are good questions.
This has been the second in the Gas and LNG Insights podcast series produced by NGW in partnership with RBAC. Thank you, and see you next time.